Are you ready for the conscience of psychiatry? For the best-selling author of Talking Back to Prozac, Medication Madness, and now Psychiatric Drug Withdrawal, it's the Dr. Peter Bregan Hour with guests unafraid to speak the truth about psychiatry and psychology and about how you can make the most of your own life.
And this is Dr. Peter Bregan. I think today's show will be one of the most important I've done, one of the most important you'll hear. Before beginning with my two guests, I want to remind you that our empathic therapy conference is coming up April 26th, 27th, and 28th. It's going to be a very interesting. It's going to have a lot of new material and new people. It will be at least as healing and exciting and informative as our two previous annual conferences, April 26th, 27th, 28th. It's going to be in Syracuse, New York, and you can find out all about it on empathictherapy.org, empathictherapy.org. Today's show, I don't even like the term show, today's hour is about Mr. Anthony Orban. Tony was a soldier. He was a police officer. He was a married man for years. He was one of the most remarkable men that you'll ever hear about. He was a genuine hero. He fought in clandestine warfare in an airplane, taking photographs, doing reconnaissance in places where Americans were not supposed to be flying and taking photographs and doing reconnaissance. He was exposed to all kinds of stress, from real-life threats to horrific noise and acceleration stresses. I interviewed people who knew him in the service, who saw him as a man who, when on the ground, was among the first to be concerned about casualties on the ground, to civilians, who was concerned about the well-being of civilians as well as the well-being of his troops, the men under him. He was admired and loved by those who worked with him. When he got out of the service and became a police officer, he was just quickly grabbed up after it, really during his training. He held the rank of detective. He had many responsible training positions at the age of 30, including being a SWAT team leader. He was particularly concerned about crimes against vulnerable people, women and children, just as he was concerned when in the military with the well-being not only of his own men but of the civilians in Iraq. Really an unusual man, highly respected. He had some stresses at work. There were some stresses in his marriage, and he went for help. He made that huge mistake, unwittingly, unknowingly, of accepting the recommendation that he take psychiatric drugs. He was put on Zoloft and Klonopin. And by the second visit on the Klonopin and Zoloft, he was feeling angry and irritable. And the doctor completely mistook the cause, thought it was the Klonopin, left him on the Zoloft and increased it. He stopped taking the Zoloft for a while, probably for about 24 days. When he went back to his doctor, the doctor forgot that he had been off for 24 days and shouldn't just be started right away on a huge 150 milligram dose of Zoloft, that he shouldn't be started all over again incrementally. This was not done. Approximately 11 days after restarting the Zoloft, this marvelous young man, Tony Orban, committed a horrendous crime that was totally out of character for him and that overcame him suddenly. I won't say much more other than, because I don't want to go into the details, but in front of another police officer, he accosted a woman as she was getting into her car and made him drive off at gunpoint. Right in front of another police officer, and then had her park the car in a very public place, which I visited as a medical expert, visited the crime scene, completely public place, where he assaulted her in the car. And to show you how psychotic he was, he emailed the ongoing crime to photographs of it to the other police officer who did not report what was going on. The woman he assaulted testified that he was extremely confused, and really her description is one of delirium for at least part of the time. Afterward, he had no memory of what he had done. In fact, he was so confused, so psychotic on the drug, Zoloft, that he left his gun behind in the automobile. He allowed the woman to flee from the automobile. And after she'd fled, he left his gun with his name taped to it, his sunglasses, left them behind in the car, wandered off, called his friend to pick him up, wandered back to the car, stayed there for a few minutes, could have been easily apprehended as the police were racing to the scene, then slowly wandered off again to be picked up by his friend, still leaving, never getting his senses enough to know that he'd left his gun behind, carried off her car keys. And then perhaps we get a few more details from his wife, Tracy, then had her call the police dispatcher to report his gun was missing, which, of course, immediately set the police in motion for knowing that he had been the perpetrator. This is a horribly sad story. I got to know his mother, Margaret, who's on the line with us, and his wife, Tracy. I got to know them very well, to care a great deal for them. I got to care a lot about what happened to Tony Orban. And I was unable to help testifying in court, I think simply for two reasons. It's still hard for people to believe that psychiatric drugs can make people so crazy, even when it's right in front of their faces, that they can turn a good man into doing acts that are wholly inimical to his very nature. And secondly, it's just hard for a jury to find a way to forgive a really brutal assault. Although the woman survived, she'd been humiliated and assaulted. When we lost the case and Tony Orban was going to his sentencing hearing, he killed himself. This is a tragedy of untold proportions that leaves many other tragic people in its wake, not just the woman that he assaulted, but himself and his loss of his own life. And I think most poignantly for me, because I've gotten to know them, his mother and his wife. Margaret and Tracy, are you on the line?
Yes, we are.
Yes.
Do you want to correct anything I've said? Have I made any mistakes in this very brief presentation of such a tragedy?
Margaret, did you
Well, actually, Jeff, you referred to him as a police officer. He actually wasn't a police officer.
He was a guard. Yeah, he was a
guard in a prison guard.
Prison. I should have made that clear.
Yeah. Doesn't change the circumstance, but I just wanted to make that correct.
Anything else? I appreciate that correction. Anything else?
No, I think you did an incredible job of just giving a brief summary of our circumstances and the tragic end that came to it.
It's just heartbreaking. I've never been so sad at the start of a show, an hour on the air in my life. Where would you like to begin? Would you like to begin with what kind of wonderful man he was? What would you like to begin with?
You know, I would like for Tracy to start because she actually lived through it all with him. She saw the changes coming over him when he started taking the medication. She lived it with him, and she supported him all the way, and she still is. That's why we're here trying to speak up and help other people.
So to help orient people, you've just been listening to Margaret Orban, the mom of Tony Orban, and Tracy, the changes on medication might be a good place to begin, or anywhere else you would like.
Okay. Actually, I'd like to start off with a quote that Tony wrote in one of his letters. "Dean's drugs destroyed me. Everything I stood for and who I am was lost the moment I started taking them. The worst part, someone else's life shattered. How do I live with that?" And that was the worst part of it, was the fact of not even realizing what was happening. And Margaret and I actually saw the interrogation, and it was horrible to wake up and to realize someone telling you, police officers telling you, you've just committed a heinous, horrendous crime. Tony was on the drugs for about 6 months. When he started taking the medications, it was like he became two different people. He was very reluctant at first to even go on the medication. But like so many of us, we are not doctors. We go to a doctor for help, and for Tony just to get help was a huge step in our marriage for him. So he went to see a psychiatrist, and shortly after, she, like you had mentioned, Dr. Brigham, she put him on those drugs, and seemed like it didn't take long for it to start stripping him. I can kind of give you examples of moments that I remember. Tony would go from extremes to happy one moment to angry, down, just crying, can't even function. It was like a zombie, a mindless zombie. He would have this gloss over look many, many times. I'd come home from work just not knowing what I was going to see, how Tony was going to be. One time I came home and Tony was in the room just in the dark staring at the fish tank. And he would do that for hours, would just sit and just stare. A lot of times we'd sit and watch a movie and he just would sit on the couch and not say a word and just sit there, not just unresponsive, just totally not him. I remember one time he was getting ready for one of his sessions to see the doctor, and he was shaking, like just couldn't control his shaking. And it was the first time that I'd seen him shake so bad. And I was going to get ready to call the paramedics because I didn't know what was happening. And he didn't know. He just said he just couldn't control, he can't control himself. So I remember driving him to the sessions. The doctor recommended that it was just him. She, per her recommendations, just to see him.
Dr. Vasa,
yes. And so I took Tony to the session. I waited in the car, and I just remember just praying, for God to help him, to just be with him. I didn't know what, you know, he was just so not himself, of just, you could see panic in his eyes. You can see him, you could see that he was scared. And maybe about an hour later, he came out of his session. It was like, seriously, a completely different person. He came in, he was happy, he wanted to go to the store. I mean, he was just so excited, so happy, so upbeat. And I just remember driving, thinking, what in the world just happened? It was literally two different people. One moment he is like, he's not even there, scared to death, and then the next moment he's upbeat, just ready to give hugs. I mean, just Tony pushed me out a lot throughout the course of his taking the medication. So when he would want a hug or anything like that, oh gosh, like that was out of the norm, because, you know, that the drugs just made him just cold and didn't even want any part in our marriage. And it just continued. While he was on the drugs, it just it didn't get better. It just, you know, he just continued to decline. He continued to be stripped. He was mentally becoming tormented. The drugs mentally tormented him. Hearing voices to kill your wife, yourself, seeing images. Many nights, wake up screaming, having horrible, horrible nightmares. I just remember thinking, you know, I didn't know what to do. I was there, but you feel so helpless. You see the person that you love. I knew Tony since high school for a total of 17 years. So I knew Tony as a healthy person and a loving person, and then to see them a complete opposite, scared, not knowing what's happening to them, just mentally deteriorating. I kind of related to, like, my grandma. She had Alzheimer's, so I could see a deterioration. Well, and that's kind of something similar with Tony. I saw a deterioration, and he would just, like I said, woke up with screaming nightmares. He would tell me oftentimes, I just can't get it to stop. And he would talk about his brain. It just goes and goes and goes and goes, and I can't get it to stop. There was one point I obviously was concerned that I called his doctor, and never called me back, never responded. And Tony had even told his doctor, Dr. Vasa, I want you to call Tracy. I want you to talk to her. And they, for whatever reason, they didn't, you know, call. I play the shoulda, coulda, would've. I, you know, should have been persistent with them, and that's one of my biggest regrets. And I wasn't. I just kind of, you know, I was there as much as I could be there for Tony. Just, yeah. Even if he didn't want to talk to me, at least I was there for those moments that he did. And when Tony would talk to his Dr. Vasa about what he was experiencing, her response is, well, it takes time. It takes time. Tony, maybe if you go on day shifts, maybe when you, because he was getting into detectives, you know, it'll be easier for you because he won't be on nights. So we thought, okay.
Margaret, Tracy, let me interrupt for one minute.
Sure.
Dr. Vasa is not here to defend herself, so
okay.
I don't want to focus on her individually so much, although you did get a chance to talk about this under oath in court, so but I got to talk about this in court, but she's, and so that's, it's out there in the public domain,
okay.
But I don't
want
to emphasize her because she's not here to defend herself, but also because it's not so much about her, it's about the way that so many psychiatrists are operating, and about these drugs, and how such dangerous drugs are being given. And what you're describing as shocking as it may seem to people who are listening, especially who aren't familiar with the subject matter, is this happens all the time to children, adults, and old people, that they deteriorate on a drug like Zoloft, which is an antidepressant. I don't know that I got into that. Zoloft is an antidepressant. It's a chemical name is sertraline. It's very much like Prozac, very much like Paxil, like Lexapro, like Luvox. It's in the general class that we call SSRI antidepressants. And people do deteriorate on them. They do become psychotic. They become manic. And so much of what you're describing about his discomfort and his having trouble sleeping and he can't stop his mind, that experience, I can't stop my mind, is the manic-like reaction that's driven by the drugs. It's not bipolar disorder. It's a manic-like reaction to the drugs. And you're giving me a very, very vivid description of it. And it's in the literature, it's in the diagnostic manual, and doctor after doctor doesn't respond to it, doesn't see that the deterioration is being caused by the drug. It's also in the the physician's desk reference, the label for Zoloft and all of these drugs describes literally a, quote, worsening of clinical condition that looks like this, and doctor after doctor isn't paying attention to it. So I just wanted to put that part in. Your descriptions, Tracy, are so graphic. They're so good. Where would you want to just pick up with that? Maybe what your husband was like in the week or two before he completely lost his mind?
Yeah. Let's see. I can go back to just before he when he came off the drug.
And then went back on again, yes.
Yeah, so there was a time, I think, I don't know if it was how many weeks.
It was about 24-day period of time.
He was off.
That ended about 11 days before before the April 2010 assault, and he was off for about 24 days, and then went back on for 11 days. And it's very characteristic, the going on, the going back off, the changing in doses. In this case, an abrupt rise in the dose from 0 to 150 milligrams. So that's about 11 days before that happens.
Yeah.
So can you pick up and talk about that period when he's off the meds and then goes back on?
Yeah, it felt like I could definitely see a big difference. When he came off the medication, he seemed to be more clear-headed. He didn't have that look that I would see in his eyes. And it's really hard to describe how Tony was. Who Tony was because of not knowing him, but there was just moments that I had of just, it was him. And I just remember embracing those moments of, it's Tony. I remember one time we were in our room and I think he was getting ready to either go to work or I was going to work. And I just remember him looking at me and I remember him telling me, it's going to be okay. Everything's going to be okay. And it just, I mean, it sounds so, you know, I don't know, kind of, not. I don't know the word for it, but it was just a moment that I embraced, and because Tony wasn't okay, you know, it wasn't okay, it hasn't been okay, but he had just a certain demeanor, and it was just having my husband back.
He was a man of great dignity and strength and personal responsibility.
Right.
He was a thoughtful man, a man who was cared about by a lot of people. And you'd get glimpses of him back during those 24 days he was off the drug. And then 11 days before this bizarre psychotic episode, violent episode, basically, the whole thing initiated, by the way, so much in public that this policeman who knew all about video cams abducts the woman under a video camera in the parking lot. And there's even a video cam that's picking up the back of the car when he parks it and assaults her in yet another shopping center. I mean, he's oblivious of reality while he's doing all of this. What was he like in the 11 days when he restarted the meds? Did you know he'd restarted?
I did. I knew that he did. And, you know, he just, everything went back to increasing it, but it was that much more. It was 10 times worse. So the symptoms that he was showing before with the high anxiety, the shakes, it just intensified. So it was that much more. The nightmares was, I mean, it just, everything was just intensified. And it just was a point that you can't control. I know people would say, well, if you're experiencing all that, wouldn't you just come off the drug? And Tony describes it as, it's like being in a bathtub, being in it, filling up one drop at a time. You don't realize. And that's exactly it. I mean, I can say that the same thing for me. It's you don't realize. You're in the middle of it. You can't foresee something so horrendous, so just horrible to happen. I mean, you don't know. You just don't know.
I really want to reaffirm for your sake and for Tony's that I hear this again and again. Even physicians, psychiatrists, you know, written in Medication Madness, where I have so many stories like this, my book Medication Madness, is one of a psychiatrist going mad while he's taking antidepressants, not realizing he's gone crazy, and assaulting a female colleague out in the open with a tack hammer, and then denying he ever did it and going to jail. And then only realizing in jail when he's off the drugs that the drugs had made him into this horribly manic state. And then I got to meet him in jail just to talk with him and reassure him long after there was any legal recourse. And I call it medication spellbinding because it has this effect. And relatives, even medical relatives, get swept up in it's the mental disorder. We have to trust the doctor.
Right.
This couldn't be happening from a drug. So even if you'd been a highly trained family member in the field of health, very likely you would not have you wouldn't have caught on to it. It's just such a foreign idea.
Yeah.
Well, that's a good point you make, Dr. Bragan, that we are brought up to trust our doctors.
Absolutely. And that's mom. That's Margaret Orban. We've been listening to Tracy Orban. We're going to go to break in about 2 minutes. This time is just filled up with so much data. We won't be able to have callers. Of course, I don't usually take callers, but at this point, the lines are used by my having two guests at one time. Margaret, I've never seen a mother and a daughter so devoted. Certainly, I've never seen anybody more devoted to a family member who has committed,
Dr. Bragan, I know who my son is. I know the truth. I know what happened to him. I know it wasn't him. I know it was the medications. And we were fighting tooth and nail to show it to the legal system. They just did not want to address it. They don't want to admit it. And they just want to win their case and move on. My son, he gave it all. You know, he sacrificed his life for our country. He trusted his doctors to help him with the medications, and it just all just backfired. They really don't monitor their patients properly. I mean, they didn't see the red flags right under their nose. Tony told them the symptoms he was having, and you think they would stop and just reevaluate what he's taking and take time to talk to him and really look at the dosage he's being given, how long he's been off. You can't have an appointment with a patient in the hallway because you're overbooked and you just write him the same prescription. You have to spend time, talk to them, and know exactly where they're at, what dosage they need, and even evaluate if this medication is working for them. Taking a vacation, changing the daytime is not going to make a difference in the medications. It's the medication that's affecting you and everything else.
We're going to go to break in a few seconds now. The music will be starting. When we come back, let's talk about what Tony was like in jail. I saw him in jail. He had a minister of the Salvation Army who was visiting him in jail and got to enormously respect him, and what he was like as he came off medication in jail when we come back. And thank you both so much. Stay with us for a few more minutes. And this is Dr. Peter Bregan, and I have today on the Dr. Peter Bregan Hour two people who fill my heart with sympathy and understanding, and whom I very much respect for their efforts to tell the painful, horrific story of Tony Orban, Anthony Orban, spelled O-R-B-A-N, on the phone, his wife Tracy, his mother Margaret. I was a medical expert in Tony's case. I got to know these people very well and to care for them and to respect them. We could pick up on what happened in jail and then Tony's death. But before then, either one of you want to maybe talk about how this has changed your lives and what you're planning to do with what you now know?
Margaret, do you want to start?
Well, you know, we just want to continue speaking up and speaking out against the effects of these medications and the dangers that they impose to people who take them. Tony just wanted from the get-go to be able to make a difference. If we could only just save one life through our tragedy, at least that was one of his last requests in his letter, that I have a new mission, his wife has a new mission, that we continue speaking up to help others, to open eyes to the dangers of the medications and just how they can just destroy lives. It's a billion-dollar business, pharmaceutical companies, and we just have to open people's eyes to the realities that drugs are not the answer, they're not a fix-all, you can't just take a pill and, you know, be okay the next day. You have to find ways to treat a person. For example, my son was a veteran, and something triggered him that sparked up his mental issues with PTSD, and we just have to focus on new ways of treating. You just can't walk into a doctor's office and within 3 minutes they're giving you a prescription. There's different ways. You have to face your issues in life. You have to be able to talk about them and just get it out. To take a medication just numbs you. You never address it, and that's not the answer. There's no easy way out to solving your problems in life, and they're just given out so readily. We just want to speak up, and we want to prevent children from being on these medications. We want to be able to help the military that's coming home. They're medicating our military while they're in battle.
Right.
And it says on the bottles, do not operate heavy machinery. So what do they think is a tank? And just all these warning signs that people are just ignoring. You know, we can't trust the pharmaceutical companies. Their information, I feel, is not correct. We have to do our own research and
right.
find out what's best for us as individuals. It's not a one-size-fits-all, absolutely not. My son had a horrendous side effect of these medications that just destroyed his life and just stole everything. He was stripped of everything. And we're left, and we're going to continue fighting the battle. We are just not going to go away. We just want to continue speaking up on his behalf, on the behalf of other people who have lost their lives because of these medications, and the people who will lose their lives because of these medications. That's our mission, that's our goal, and that's what we're trying to do.
Mm.
Honor Tony and help others.
I realized that just this moment, I'm surprised you didn't say more to me about it, that I actually morphed Tony's story in my upset in talking with the story of another veteran who was a pilot. I just realized that I did that. And it's, you know, this is not easy for me to handle because it's coming back to me what Tony's experiences were, which were not some of what I described. I think you very kindly just let me get by with that. I mean, Tony was on the ground entirely, and he had some horrific experiences of close-up slaughter and mayhem on the ground. I'm actually morphing this with another veteran's case I'm working on right now, and I apologize for that.
Sorry, Dr.
But I guess it also contributes to the universality. Mm-hmm. I mean, tomorrow I'm going to be discussing this other case at length, and I've been working on it for a couple of years. And what brought it back to mind was
go from house to house.
Yeah, yes. And he had this experience, Tony did, as a, as you mentioned, his PTSD was kicked up by a very similar experience to being in Iraq, where he had to storm into a bar as a member of the SWAT team and stormed into a situation where there was blood and a man lying on the floor, and it just recaptured the horror of that from mm-hmm. his earlier experiences. And God, I beg your forgiveness for this, that, and your gentleness in not confronting me about morphing these two veteran stories. And the other veteran, like Tony, is this powerful, wonderful man whose PTSD is mistreated by the VA, and who ends up, unlike Tony, his story is one of long chronicity of drug treatment, ended up terribly physically and emotionally injured by years of mistreatment. So, wow, I don't believe I just did that. I'm sure you do forgive me for it.
Yeah.
Well, you know, Dr. to be honest with you, Tony really didn't talk much about what he did over there. So it wouldn't surprise me if he was up an airplane doing something, because he
I see why. No, but he never told me any airplane stories. The stories I got from him were the kind you expect, you know, with the long lines of cars and dismembered soldiers and just, you know, horrible details. And they were kicked up by this experience in the SWAT team. So, oh, God.
Yeah, and
I don't
know,
believe that I just did that.
That's okay, Dr. Bregan. It's not a problem. None of that was ever even allowed to be talked about in court. People don't want to hear that kind of stuff, you know.
Tony, not to interrupt, Margaret, but Tony said, you know, I'm the truth that nobody wants to see. And it's true.
Yeah.
Nobody wants to hear about it. Nobody wants to see. It's just the way it is right now. And I say right now because my prayer is that there will be stricter laws. Blood tests will be done.
Yeah. You know, there's so much is intertwined in this, these experiences of things people don't want to know. They don't. It's hard for any of us to mm-hmm. want to know what mm-hmm. soldiers go through.
Mm-hmm.
It's just horrific to think about what soldiers go through, and then the stress of
being.
I can
begin to imagine.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I don't even think we can begin to imagine the things that they see.
I don't think so. Well, and just trying to imagine it, I mean, as you saw today, just blew my mind, and I did something I've never done on the air before, you know, which is get really confused about what I was talking about between two men that I so admire, one dead now, your son and husband, and the other who is so injured and recovering now that he's out of drug treatment, and this case I'm currently working on. Wow. Where would you all like to go while I take a deep breath? What would you like to talk about?
I just feel it's an epidemic, over-medicating. I just think it's just out of control. That's the first thing they want to give you, and that's what we want to change. We want to do something. I, myself, as Tony's mother, knowing the person that he was and the sacrifices he made, I want to be able to get involved somehow with the military and helping veterans and just being able to speak up for them and, you know, not only veterans, but just citizens like you and I are. I see people at work talking about taking his medications, and I just have to open up and start telling them, this is not the answer. This is not going to help you. You need to talk. You need to work through your issues, and you don't want to give this to your children. It's just like taking candy. They think all they need to do is take a pill, and I just want to change people's attitude towards these medications that the pharmaceutical companies and the commercials on TV that you see, they make it sound so easy, and it isn't. It's, you
yes.
know, well, mentally it's a battle. It's not that easy.
You know, and Ginger and I want to help you in this process. I haven't wanted to push you or to encourage you in any way to do this reform work because it's such a personal decision. But now that you've said that you've committed to this, I think for us, one of the next steps is to have you write something for the newsletter.
You know, Doctor,
and we've been talking about that. Yes.
This is what we're doing in honor of Tony, and this is what is helping us get through the pain to make something good come out of all of this negative, horrendous ordeal that we've gone through. And this is what Tony wants, and this is what we're going to do. We've been given our assignment, and we are
Yes. And next year, not this April, which is just a month away now, but in the coming year, I can think of ways to further involve you with conferences. Mm-hmm. If at that point either one of you want to continue with this.
Absolutely.
And you've already met some of the other people that I've been working with now for several years, some other women who have had great losses from the drugs.
Yeah, we're trying to branch out. We've met a few people here and there trying to connect. Stan White and Shirley White, they had a son they lost in combat, and their other son, they lost the medication. So that's one example right there. And they're big advocates against the psychotropic medications. So, but, you know, we're ready. It's helping us with our grief.
Yeah. And you're so right about the over-medicating the soldiers. I mean, I'm getting estimates that a third or more of combat troops are on psychiatric drugs. That's just bizarre.
Yeah.
And firsthand from nurses who are at the rehab centers that the boys go to and girls on the way home, these young people go to, that anyone with a psychiatric drug, with a psychiatric diagnosis like PTSD or anxiety or depression, is on multiple drugs. So each one is an experiment at the hands of some psychiatrist.
That's it.
And then we're getting people dying, sudden deaths.
Mm-hmm.
Young, healthy men and women coming back and having sudden death from being on multiple psychiatric drugs. There's just a huge picture here of just an enormous overall problem.
Dr. Brigham, I have a question. What are your thoughts with patients that take the drugs and they've been on it for 30, 20, 30 years? Because, you know, I do see, well, I've taken those drugs and, you know, nothing's wrong with me. And that's kind of, I think, where people will see, well, there are so many thousand that are taking them. So I kind of want to know what your thoughts are.
Well, first, you know, I have got the book out now, Psychiatric Drug Withdrawal, which is a guide for people who have been on the drugs for many months or years and how to come off. Let me put in that warning that you can't just, you know, listen to us talking and immediately stop drugs. It's just as dangerous to quickly stop drugs as it is to start them, and it's dangerous when your doses go up and down. Anything that jerks the brain around some more is dangerous. And I recommend that people coming off the medications do so with a lot of informed family support, a good therapist supporting them, and hopefully a clinician that has some experience in the area. What we're finding with people who are on antidepressants and most other psychiatric drugs over years and years and years is there is a loss of quality of life over time. That for many people there's a loss of sharpness, there's a loss of quickness, there's a loss of the ability to multitask, a loss of some of the fine emotional tuning. Varies a lot from people, from person to person, and I've described it, and I have a chapter in a book about it, I've described it as chronic brain impairment. If a person can get off the drugs, doing it slowly and carefully, there's often a lot of improvement, and some people feel completely improved. And again, a great deal of variation in how people respond to these drugs. Do you want to talk a bit about, we have about 10 minutes left, a bit about Tony in jail and in prison and then what finally happened?
Margaret, did you want to?
Well, I know in seeing Tony, Tracy described an episode where he just had like this glazed over look in his eye. One time I went to visit him when he was still on medications there, and it's like he wasn't there. I remember looking in his eyes. They were as big as saucers. He was shaking his legs and stuff, and it wasn't even like, who was that I just talked to? So I understand what she says when she's describing Tony in those moments. I think Tony was on 8 or more different medications when he was in there. They switched him from this to this. Mm. And let me tell you, everybody in there is on some type of medication. They have all the inmates medicated. They make billions of dollars off inmates in prison, whether they need it or not. And they're going to take them because it's just they get high off of them. And when I would see Tony, when he finally got off all the medications by your recommendation, it was just Tony back again. He was very sad and devastated, but Tony was there. You could just see in his eyes who he was.
And you know, Dr. Bregan, sorry to interrupt, Margaret, but it was a fight to keep Tony alive.
Yeah.
I mean, he was suicidal, gosh, like when he was on the drug before the crime. I mean, he was that much more. And the fact that when he actually came off the drug, everything was real now. Now he got to feel the real emotion.
Yeah.
And it was a struggle to keep him alive. It really was. I mean, we are believers. We have Christ, and Tony, thankfully, just really got to know the Lord and just really leaned on him to get him through each and every single day. And it was painful. It was painful to go visit. We were visiting five nights a week. We would visit as much as we were allowed to. So if we got 5 nights, we were there over 2.5 years. And it was a struggle. Each day we didn't know how Tony was going to be, trying to just lift his spirits and say, you know what, we have the truth. We have the truth. They're going to see. And, you know, it didn't work out the way we prayed. But I do believe that good will come, that despite our pain and despite our loss and Tony taking his life, I know that as Margaret and I speak out and open eyes, that others will be saved and others can see and know. And if it can happen to us, it can happen to anybody. I was the first one to say, oh, that can't happen to me. And this is our reality. So it was a struggle.
You know,
Go ahead.
Tony was called a coward and that he took the easy way out by taking his life. And in reality, Tony, he did what he did for us. He did not want us to endure any more pain and suffering and disgrace. And yes, he did. He did do it for himself because he just couldn't live the rest of his life knowing this crime that he committed, bearing the shame and the burden of it all. He was ashamed. And he just
humiliated.
He did this. And he just could not handle seeing our family.
Mortified.
He was mortified. He just felt it was the best way out for everybody because we wouldn't have to feel just compelled to, you know, just the pain he saw in us every time we went to see him, even though we tried to, you know, put on our face for him. You know, you can see inside somebody's heart when you visit, just like we could see where Tony was.
Oh, he was, yeah.
Yeah.
He was so tired. He was, you know... He was mentally tormented on the drug, and to knowing what that feels like, I mean, he said, you know, Iraq was a cakewalk compared to that, and it's just he's tired. He was done. It came to the towards the end. It just he felt like if it's not going to save his life, at least maybe a law can be passed through our case, something. But when he realized it's not going to matter, that's it. He's just going to go away, that's it. Nothing's going to come up, nothing good. There was no way. There was no way he was going to live with that.
Yeah.
And the fact of being a police officer and your life expectancy, he wasn't going to have someone else determine how he was going to die. And, you know, I don't blame him one bit. He had said, you know, when one of his last letters to me, I can't provide, you know, I could never be able to provide for you anymore, Tracy. And I, you know, we were on our way to, you know, our marriage getting better, and it just, before it all blew up, and it just, there's no, Tony couldn't live with that. It was something he did for us.
Yes.
And just those final moments, those last days that we had with him, we could see, we knew it was coming. We knew that he wasn't gonna go away to prison for the rest of his life. He was gonna be charged with 200 years to life. He knew that, we knew there's no way. We didn't want to believe that, but we knew, he wasn't gonna live with that. I mean, that was one of the things he wrote. How do I live with that?
Yeah.
How does a good person, a good human being, a healthy person live with something like that? I mean, you just can't imagine. No one can even imagine how he felt.
Before our time is up, which will be in a few minutes, do either of you want people to get in touch with you at this time? And if so, do you want to give some contact information?
Absolutely.
Sure, absolutely.
I can give you my email address. I have to work on getting a web page going, but that's a work in progress. But my email address is marinemom7979@gmail.com.
Now say it again one more time, Margaret, slower.
marinemom7979@gmail.com.
And Tracy, do you want anyone to be able to get in touch with you, or do you want to
do it
through your mom?
Margaret will, if they contact Margaret, we can just go through, yeah. We'll just share each other, yeah, so that way we're not.
Wow, this has certainly been the hardest hour I've ever spent on the air in my life. There's no doubt about that.
Thank you for giving us the opportunity.
Yeah, thank you, Dr. Bregan.
Oh, God, and thank you for your bravery, your courage, your love, your efforts. As just a third person observer, I mentioned earlier, I spoke at length and I quoted in my testimony in court the Salvation Army minister and counselor who saw Tony, and described the change in Tony when he came off the meds. That he was actually, Tony was really confiding in him, and he was really quite psychotic underneath while on the meds. And he got saner when he was off the medications, and it was Tony's decision, definitely not mine. It was Tony's decision to come off the meds, and that he then was able to be more spiritual and loving, but he also had to deal more with his remorse when he was off the medication.
Yes.
What a terrible bind for him to have been in.
No one can imagine. I mean, you actually feel the emotion. It was a blessing to have Major Noddle there. His visits were tape recorded where ours were, so Tony could really, really receive Major Noddle and spiritual counseling that he gave. And, you know, Major Noddle just he embraced and ended up loving Tony, you know, just
ended up, he did.
You know, loved him like his own son. And we are forever grateful for somebody to just come along and not judge, and just to care and to love, because that's what, that's how Tony got through the 2.5 years. People just surrounded friends and family with his love. So.
Well, we're coming to a close. I've been talking with Margaret Orban, Tony's mother, and Tracy Orban, Tony's wife, two very heroic, responsible, loving, spiritual women who gave every bit of support they could to Tony. And I just want to thank you both enormously for coming on the show, and apologize for my own poor powers Okay. In dealing with all of this, I wish I'd been able to communicate to the jury what the world really needs to know. Right. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Oh, we can do.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye now, and thanks, PRN, for this opportunity.